Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Sasha hated sand, the way it stuck to things for weeks. So when Maddie shared a surf trip on Expedia Trip Planner, he hesitated. Then he added a hotel with a cliffside pool to the plan. And they both spent the week in the water. You were made to follow your whims. We were made to help find a place on the beach with a pool and a waterfall and a soaking tub and, of course, a great shower. Expedia. Made to travel.
With Dash Pass from DoorDash, get more to your door for less. Groceries, self-care, restaurants, and snacks. With no delivery fees and savings on every order. Dash that with Dash Pass from DoorDash. Start your 30-day free trial now. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. Hello, I'm Oliver Conway. This edition is published in the early hours of Saturday, the 6th of January. The US President Joe Biden kicks off America's election year with an attack on Donald Trump.
Today, we're here to answer the most important of questions. Is democracy still America's sacred cause?
Hezbollah says it has to respond to the assassination of a Hamas leader in its stronghold in Lebanon or face more Israeli attacks. And
those people who spoke freely, they were arrested, they were beaten, they were tortured. Some of them were killed in the jail.
We report on an opposition crackdown ahead of Bangladesh's election. Also in the podcast, move over Hollywood, make way for Nollywood.
In the cinema, I watched it. Everyone who saw the movie was up on their feet, clapping for the producer of the movie.
The Nigerian film that's storming the box office. And we hear which band has won the BBC's prestigious Sound of 2024. The US President Joe Biden has kicked off America's election year with a forceful attack on his likely rival, Donald Trump. Speaking in Pennsylvania near Valley Forge, the site where George Washington regrouped his forces during the War of Independence, President Biden highlighted Mr. Trump's actions on the 6th of January 2021 when his supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol.
Today, we're here to answer the most important of questions. Is democracy still America's sacred cause? I mean it. The choice is clear. Donald Trump's campaign is about him, not America, not you. He's willing to sacrifice our democracy. Put himself in power. Our campaign is different.
Mr. Biden also accused his predecessor of using language reminiscent of Adolf Hitler's Nazi party.
With former aides, Trump plans to invoke the Insurrection Act, which would allow him to deploy, which is not allowed to do in ordinary circumstances, U.S. military forces on the streets of America. He said it. He calls those who oppose him vermin. He talks about the blood of America as being poisoned, echoing the same exact language used in Nazi Germany.
Well, ahead of the speech, the Trump campaign released an advert accusing Mr. Biden of being the true destroyer of democracy. For an assessment of what Mr. Biden had to say, I spoke to our correspondent in Washington, Will Vernon.
Well, this speech was all about Donald Trump, wasn't it? There was absolutely no mention whatsoever of what Joe Biden would do if he's elected. I think this was a clear attempt to shift the focus of his campaign. Last year, Biden was all about Bidenomics, right? The campaign were talking about the economic achievements under his administration. But that hasn't appeared to work for the president. You know, his poll numbers are not good. And I think now the decision has been made, it appears that way at least, that this campaign, now the narrative should be more about not a referendum on the Biden administration, but more a kind of mission to stop Trump, assuming, of course, he is the candidate. So Mr. Biden today portrayed Mr. Trump as a clear threat to democracy, which he said is America's sacred cause. And he claimed the events of January the 6th, exactly 3 years ago, when that violent mob of Mr. Trump's supporters attacked Congress, those events showed that Mr. Trump was willing to sacrifice democracy for power.
Will this new strategy from the Biden campaign work? Will it win over the doubters?
Well, he's got a difficult task ahead of him. Almost every poll you look at sounds like bad news for Mr. Biden. You know, his approval rating is around 37 to 40%. Analysts say that is the lowest of any president at this stage of his presidency. 56% of people don't want Mr. Biden to be the nominee, although it's true they don't want Trump either. And 70% of people say that he's too old to be president. But many analysts at this stage say these polls don't really mean much, 10 months away from the election. And I think the Biden campaign are hoping that when it comes to November and people are presented with a stark choice in front of their eyes, either Joe Biden or Donald Trump, the man who faces 91 criminal charges, who attempted to overturn the results of a legitimate election, I think they're hoping that at that point, people will decide to vote for Joe Biden.
Will Vernon in Washington. After staying relatively quiet for the best part of 2 months, Hassan Nasrallah has now spoken out twice in a matter of days. Once again, the Hezbollah chief threatens to retaliate against Israel for its suspected role in the assassination of a Hamas leader based in Lebanon. Saleh al-Aruri died in a drone strike in Hezbollah's stronghold of South Beirut. Hassan Nasrallah said that over the past 2 months, Hezbollah had carried out 670 attacks on Israel, and he hinted there would be more to come.
As for southern Beirut, I say this will not pass without a response, nor without a punishment. Our reaction will surely come. We cannot stay silent on a violation of this level of danger, because this would mean all of Lebanon would be exposed.
Backed by Iran, Hezbollah has in the past posed a serious military threat to Israel, even forcing it to end its 15-year occupation of South Lebanon. The border area remains disputed, though, and Hassan Nasrallah said he hoped Lebanon could eventually get some of its land back. For an assessment of this latest speech, I spoke to our correspondent in Jerusalem, Shaima Khalil.
He's defiant. He again wants to appear to his following that Hezbollah hasn't taken its eye off the ball in terms of retaliation to the killing of Saleh al-Aruri at the heart of the Hezbollah stronghold. He said that the attacks continue in Lebanon's southern border, in Israel's northern border. He did hint to a long-term goal, if you will, that the war in Gaza and the resistance in Gaza is going to give Hezbollah a chance to liberate some of Lebanon's borders. I reckon that's a long way off, but still, I think, restraining himself and Hezbollah from going on an all-out conflict with Israel.
The international community keen to prevent an escalation. We're seeing the US Secretary of State heading to the region, the EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs due in Lebanon too. At the same time, in Gaza, where there have been calls from various international players for Israel to calm things down, we're still seeing a high rate of fire. What is happening there?
Not only have we seen calls from the international community for a scaled-down offensive in Gaza, we've also heard the military a week ago saying that they were going to withdraw troops, withdraw reservists. That has not translated. What you're seeing is a sustained bombardment and a sustained ground operation, whether it's in central Gaza or southern Gaza. And in central Gaza, again, to remind our listeners, the Israeli army has demanded that people in the center, it's a strip of land that goes across central Gaza and affects three densely populated refugee camps. And there's been sustained bombardment there. There's one hospital, Al-Aqsa Hospital, that caters for all of the casualties that come in. And that has been extremely overwhelmed. So as this goes on, the safer areas for people to go become much, much smaller. But also the humanitarian aid then becomes very difficult because it's not just about delivery, but also the fact that it has to travel a long and very treacherous road to get to the people who need it.
Shaima Khalil in Jerusalem. The Hamas-run health ministry says 162 Palestinians died in Gaza in the most recent 24-hour period. Israel says another of the hostages held in the territory has been declared dead, bringing the total to 25. Some of the captives seized by Hamas on the 7th of October were taken from the Nova Music Festival. A number of survivors of that atrocity and relatives of those killed or abducted have recently been back to the scene. Our correspondent Wira Davis was with them.
This is the site of the Nova Music Festival. Just before 6:30 on the morning of October the 7th, Hamas gunmen streamed across the border from Gaza and attacked people enjoying the music, enjoying being young. Almost 400 people were killed at this site, around 40 abducted to Gaza, where they remain. Everything has gone from this site, but that doesn't mean that what happened here has been forgotten.
Don't turn your back on my sister and on another 135 that needs the world help.
Today, several survivors and relatives of the missing came back to give their personal testimony.
As soon as I got out of there, I learned that a hostage video of my brother was already released by Hamas. Ever since then, my family lives have turned into a living hell.
There's almost nothing left here at the festival site, apart from hundreds of images of those people who were killed. Among them is Einav Levy. Her husband, Or, is being held captive by Hamas in Gaza, and today is the first day that his brother Michael has come back to the site.
But it wasn't easy to stand here and look at the ground and see the bullets and see the faces, and they need to bring them back as soon as possible. We all can do more.
Much of the world's attention is still focused on the ongoing war in Gaza, where more than 22,000 people, many of them civilians, have been killed. But Israel doesn't want the world to forget what happened in places like this on October the 7th. This is quite a remarkable exhibition in Tel Aviv. It's the Nova exhibition. It's a faithful reproduction of the party site on the border with Gaza, which was attacked by Hamas on October the 7th. Everything that is here has been brought back from that festival site. There are tents, there are sleeping bags, there are cars in which people tried to escape and in which many people were murdered. There are photographs, there are art exhibitions.
So my name is Tal Shimoni, I'm 25, and my role in the party was one of the team leaders in the Eco Nova project. People don't understand how our life looked a minute before, and look at how colorful this place is. We were in one of the peaks of the moments of our life. We were so happy to dance with our community. The gap between joyful moments and friendship moments and love to horrors and fear is huge.
One of the most poignant exhibits here is the bar. Drinks, ashtrays, a till with bullet holes in it, and most poignantly, six or seven fridges in which people try to hide. Hamas fighters open the fridge doors and shot people as they hit inside the fridges. Many bodies were found between the fridges. This was a scene of utter carnage on October the 7th, and many of the things associated with that day have been brought back here to this exhibition centre in Tel Aviv so that people don't forget. And people do remember.
Wira Davis reporting from Israel. The Belgorod region of Russia bordering Ukraine says it has started moving families away from the area as the Ukrainian military steps up cross-border bombardments. More from our Europe reporter, Sasha Schlichter.
Belgorod lies just northeast of Ukraine's second city, Kharkiv, so no wonder it's borne the brunt of Ukraine's retaliation with almost daily drone and mortar attacks. Yet, to read Governor Gladkov's Telegram channel, you'd think it's just some ragtag gang causing a nuisance. He never uses the word war, but last weekend, Belgorod came under the most intense barrage, which killed 25 people. Today, Mr. Gladkov advised residents to sellotape their windows, but even better, avail themselves of an offer of a comfortable bus ride to two outlying towns, where they will get free food and lodging. You will stay there for as long as necessary, he added. Reading between the lines, this means the governor is admitting that the situation will not change any time soon.
Sasha Schlichter. A Nigerian film has broken box office records by becoming the first locally produced movie to earn more than $1 million there. A Tribe Called Judah is about five brothers plotting a heist to get money to help their ailing mother.
That day is the perfect day for us to strike. We will go like guests for the party, wear our different costumes, enter the store.
The film was created by the Nigerian actor, director and producer Funke Akindele. Our reporter in Lagos, Yusuf Akinpelu, told me more about it.
It's a story that coincided with survival instinct, with the everyday struggle of a single mother the everyday struggle of an average Nigerian on how to meet their health insurance, their health obligation, and how people struggle to survive. It is something that we call in local parlance to say the cast understood the assignment and they all delivered, and it was amazing. Even at the end of the movie, in the cinema I watched it, everyone who saw the movie was up on their feet clapping for the producer of the movie.
And has that surprised people, or looking at the plot and the stars, did people think actually this one could do quite well?
When the producer was asked this question prior to its premiere 3 weeks ago, Funke Akindele, she said what she expects is, she said she believed it would do the numbers and it would be a blockbuster. And it's been coming for the past 3 years or so. She's been releasing movies at the end of the year, which would be very great movies that will break box office records.
And expected to overtake Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, a Hollywood blockbuster, of course. What does this mean for the Nigerian film industry?
That means the Nigerian storytellers have come to stay. People should watch out for Nigerian storytellers. Not just this movie, there's been a lot of movies that were released that were amazing. The likes of Black Book, which was released on Netflix, and the likes of Breath of Life, and a couple of other movies like that. That's just to show you the amount of talent in terms of storytelling that is in this country. And as we like to say among ourselves here, one of the biggest exports of Nigeria is its entertainment, both its music and its movies. They are not just coming to the table, but they are rather bringing their own cheers to the table.
Yusuf Akinpelo in Lagos. David Soul, heartthrob star of one of the biggest TV shows of the 1970s, has died at the age of 80. He was best known for playing Detective Kenneth Hutchinson in Starsky and Hutch. But as David Sillitoe reports, acting wasn't his first love.
Don't give up on us, baby.
David Soul and Don't Give Up on Us, Baby. 1977 was the year for David Solberg.
The future isn't just one night.
The blonde, blue-eyed son of a Lutheran pastor from South Dakota. Two number ones, the star of one of the biggest shows on TV. He'd made his name as Hutch in Starsky and Hutch. Undercover cops who relied on frequent car chases and the all-knowing Huggy Bear to fight crime.
What's the name of that friend of yours?
Sneaky Pete.
Sneaky Pete.
And every now and again, he'd find a reason to sing. David Soul had long wanted to be known for his voice more than his looks, which is why his music career began with this.
I am the covered man.
I started doing some concert work and had a gimmick where I put a bag over my head and called myself the covered man. But I never let anybody see what I looked like. I refused to take the mask off.
I don't have to be seen.
But he had more success acting, appearing here as a malevolent policeman with Clint Eastwood.
What are you going to do next week?
In Magnum Force.
Kill a dozen more?
However, by the end of the 70s, he was keen to escape from Hutch and the attendant fame. He ended up moving to the UK, appearing in Holby City, Jerry Springer the Opera, and Little Britain. Along the way, there were five marriages, a drink problem, even a short spell in jail. But for a certain generation, David Soul would always be the blonde singing superstar of his 70s heyday.
Come on, Superman, baby.
David Sillitoe on David Soul, who's died at the age of 80. And still to come on the Global News podcast.
We'd like recover something from what he had left in the yard and say, oh my gosh, we have a 6 for the serial number.
After a very expensive dog's dinner, how the owners managed to get some of their money back. At least 4 people have been killed and many others injured in a fire on a moving train in Bangladesh, with the police saying they suspect an arson attack ahead of the election on Sunday. The train was travelling to the capital, Dhaka, from the western city of Jessore. This passenger described how he escaped the blaze.
When I opened my eyes, I could see nothing but smoke. I threw one of my sons from the train window and a person outside caught him. Another son and my wife somehow managed to escape. I was about to go abroad. My passport and other belongings were packed inside the train, and I couldn't recover them.
Well, turning to the election, the main opposition party is boycotting what it calls a sham poll, claiming many of its supporters have been arrested, beaten and even killed for criticising the government. The Prime Minister, Sheikh Hasina, looks set to lead her party to a fourth win in a row. The BBC South Asia correspondent Samira Hussain reports from the capital, Dhaka.
An election slogan being chanted in favour of the ruling party. It's coming from a giant speaker attached to a white van and it's snaking through the streets.
So right in front of me there's a gentleman who is putting up political posters. They're black and white photos of the local Awami League candidate. And just above him on this poster is a photograph of the Prime Minister, Sheikh Hasina.
What's missing are any posters in favour of opposition candidates.
We're going to interview a woman whose husband died in prison after he was arrested. He was a supporter of the BNP, the opposition party. And to protect her, we're actually moving somewhere further away from her house. We're walking up a flight of stairs. This is a building that's somewhat abandoned or under construction. Jury's out on which one it is. We're going to do the interview here.
This woman's husband, a well-known worker for the country's main opposition party, the BNP, or the Bangladesh Nationalist Party, was arrested last year. 26 days later, her son got a call that his father died in jail.
Just 3 days earlier, my son saw his father healthy. My daughter spoke to him. I spoke to him. I saw him. My son keeps saying, no, my father can't die like this. When he asked them how my father died, they said, I don't know. Just come to Dhaka Medical College morgue and take him.
She said when she saw her husband, he had marks all over his body, hands and face. Authorities told her he had died of natural causes, but she believes he was tortured. Her story is not in isolation, especially in the lead-up to the elections. There's been a severe crackdown on freedom of expression and peaceful protests. Human Rights Watch says authorities have been engaged in mass arrests, excessive force, torture, and extrajudicial killings. The main targets? Critics of the government.
Hello, good sir. Good to see you. My name is Samira.
Anisul Haq is the Minister of Law in Bangladesh.
Why do you think some BNP officials and supporters are afraid to speak in public?
I don't know why. Ask them. It's their right to speak up in public. We are not stopping them from doing so. If there is a mindset not to speak or there is an intention to prove to the world that we can't speak, I don't know if that's the plan. But let me make one thing very clear. We are not gagging anybody.
Yes, you can speak freely, but nobody is going to take the responsibility of the consequence.
Nasrul Islam is a leading member of the BNP, and even he takes precautions when speaking out.
Because those people who spoke freely, they were arrested, they were beaten, tortured. Some of them were killed in the jail.
With the opposition party boycotting these elections, the people of Bangladesh are left with two options. Vote for the current ruling government, like these supporters are chanting, or vote for independents, who are also supporting the ruling government. Either way, it will likely be a win for Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina, who is determined to show the world her country can hold free and fair elections.
Samira Hussain reporting from Bangladesh. A major Chinese financial business has filed for bankruptcy with debts of up to $64 billion. Zhongzhe Enterprise Group had been an important part of China's shadow banking industry, and its liquidation could have wider implications, as Celia Hatton explains.
China's shadow banks are legal but unregulated financial organizations, lenders, brokers and creditors that emerge to offer loans to individuals and smaller companies that aren't served by China's traditional banks. Zhongzhe Enterprise Group, or ZEG, was once a major player. Its decline is tied to wider problems in China's real estate sector, which has already seen the collapse or near bankruptcy of some of the world's biggest developers. Now the real estate industry, which represents around a third of China's economy, is in financial distress. Many shadow banks are also falling into debt.
Our Asia-Pacific regional editor, Celia Hatton. New balls, please. So the saying goes in tennis. Well, some tennis stars say they need a change after blaming some balls for an increase in injuries. Fluffy ones are said to be the worst, getting increasingly heavy and slow. But players are also unhappy at the wide variety they have to use. 4 weeks, four different balls, as the three-time Grand Slam champion Stan Wawrinka put it recently. Now the tennis authorities are looking at various solutions. Our tennis correspondent Russell Fuller has the details.
The players certainly think that the balls are contributing to more injuries. But when I spoke to the men's ATP tour, they said there's no evidence to suggest there are more injuries or even that there's been a huge spike to particular parts of the body like the wrist, the elbow, the arm or the shoulder. But at the same time, they do accept that the way the modern game is evolving, matches are getting longer. It's an incredibly physical battle between players that actually they do need to do something to moderate the balls, because I think they do accept that increasingly longer matches are not in anyone's interest, and by that they probably mean the television audience as well as the health of the players.
Tell us about the different balls and what impact they have on the players.
It's amazing how differently they can play. And where it might be difficult to reach a consensus with a way forward is that some players do like the balls to be heavy and slow, and therefore it's quite difficult to hit winners, whereas other players like the balls to be lighter, that speed through the air, and it's therefore much easier to hit winners or to hit aces. Balls also vary because of the surface on which they're being used. There's a big difference between a clay court, a grass court, and a hard court. You've got to factor in the amount of moisture in the air, for example. Balls will fly differently indoors and outdoors. So there's a reason why balls will vary depending on where you're playing and on what surface. The trouble, I think, is that the parameters that the manufacturers are working within are too wide. So manufacturers can sell a ball to a tournament and that ball can be used at a particular tournament. What the men's governing body, the ATP, want to do is actually make sure that the parameters are narrower. I think the other thing that they will look to do is change the balls more frequently within a match, which means the ball that you're using for a particular rally should hopefully be lighter and livelier for longer. And that also should reduce the wear and tear on wrists and elbows and shoulders.
Our tennis correspondent, Russell Fuller. Dog owners typically spend hundreds of dollars a year or more on pet food. But a couple in the US city of Pittsburgh were shocked to find their pooch had devoured thousands of dollars in cash in one go. Peter Goffin takes up the story.
Cecil is a good boy. He's just a big, shaggy dog with a big appetite and expensive tastes.
The money was just strewn on the floor like half-eaten bills, and the envelope was completely gone, so...
Cecil's owners, Clayton and Carrie Law, had withdrawn $4,000 in cash to pay for a new fence. But the retriever poodle Mix had different ideas. Left on his own for half an hour, he snagged the money off the kitchen counter. And then it was dinner time. The vet said the money would not hurt Cecil. But food that rich was bound to upset his stomach a little.
I was like, I'm just going to follow him and see if anything comes out for a couple days. And it did, yeah.
The couple painstakingly picked through Cecil's vomit and other deposits, collecting shreds of $50 and $100 bills. They scrubbed up the scraps and pieced them back together like a high-priced jigsaw puzzle, and somehow they managed to recover nearly the entire sum, $3,550.
We had to have, like, the majority of the serial number on both sides, and the bank said if we taped it, that would help, so I'm trying to find numbers, and we'd like recover something from what he had left in the yard and say, oh my gosh, we have a six for the serial number.
The search is still on for the remaining $450. The laws say they'll send the mismatched bits and pieces to the U.S. Treasury Department, which says it will redeem mutilated currency under the right circumstances. As for Cecil's relationship with the laws, there are no hard feelings.
In reality, we were never mad, and I don't think you can really get, you know, angry at a pet for doing something like this, and you just have to love your pet. That's what they're there for.
That report by Peter Goffin. Since they released their debut single 8 months ago, the British indie rock band The Last Dinner Party have had a meteoric rise. They've toured with Florence and the Machine, made their Glastonbury debut, and won the Rising Star Prize at the Brit Awards, the UK's equivalent of the Grammys. On Friday, they joined the likes of 50 Cent, Adele and Sam Smith by winning the BBC's prestigious Sound of 2024. Our music correspondent Mark Savage went to meet them.
I wish I knew you back when we were both small. I wish I knew you, but I have gotten too tall. I wish I knew you.
What does it feel like that kind of all of these people, the 149 critics and the DJs and the festival bookers all think, OK, you're not just a sign of 2024 or one of the signs of 2024, you're the sign of 2024. That's a big definite article.
I guess it's hard to like comprehend because we haven't seen any of these people. The only time I think any of this will sink in is if we're, you know, on a stage in front of a crowd of people who are there looking at us, engaging with the music and enjoying it.
Here where the world is small, but how you touch me, for that I leave.
But you developed so much. You know, I've seen you twice, and you feel like you own the stages that you play on. What are the things you've picked up along the way?
We've shared a stage with Florence Machine, and we're on the tour with Hozier at the minute, so I think it's learning from these people who have been in the music industry for so long, and they know how to occupy a stage and to command attention of a massive arena. So yeah, it's been good to learn from these artists.
I have my sentence now at last, I know just how you felt.
And you mentioned Florence, she was just here. But she was giving you, you know, little bits of advice from when she'd been at this stage in her career. What's it like to have that support from the artists that you looked up to?
Indescribable. So precious, really.
Getting emotional, Georgia, because I think Florence meant quite a lot to you.
No, okay, it's fine. I discovered her music when I was like 9, and I was like, oh my God, like I feel understood and like connected to a person, and she lived on the other side of the world. And so for her to say like that she's proud of us and like that we are doing something that she wished that she had seen, it's just like so insane. So insane.
Take me back to your swimming pool. You love me, little foolish thinking I could have you.
My Lady of Mercy is another incredible song. On Instagram you wrote, it's about being a girl. But tell me more, what does that mean?
I had a very kind of strict Catholic upbringing, went to Catholic school, and when I kind of was becoming a teenager, and you know, you're simultaneously having like a massive, horrible, hormonal, spiritual, emotional change, and then going throughout the same time as sort of not being straight in a Catholic school is just a lot of turmoil. But it's, I remember at that time grappling with those feelings, but finding immense comfort in sort of looking at images of martyrs and sexuality in religion, and instead of, you know, closing myself off to that, I thought it was actually a really good way of exploring sex and desire and lust and all that, as many have done before me.
The winners of the BBC Sound of 2024, The Last Dinner Party, talking to Mark Savage. And that is all from us for now, but the Global News podcast will be back at the same time tomorrow. This edition was mixed by Ethan Connolly Forster and produced by Emma Joseph. Our editor is Karen Martin. I'm Oliver Conway. Until next time, goodbye.
Trip Planner by Expedia. You were made to have strong opinions about sand. We were made to help you and your friends find a place on the beach with a pool and a marina and a waterfall and a soaking tub. Expedia, made to travel.
We carry the world in our pockets. For breaking news you can trust and the stories that shape us, choose Canada's News app. Reporting from the scene onto your screens. When you want, where you want. Download the free CBC News app today.